Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues. And boy, do we have news today, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. Let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back. Attorney Von Kleem, former police officer, current attorney. He's also with Force Science. So thanks so much for being on the show, Von. We appreciate it. We've also got Dr. Travis Yates, retired major from the Tulsa Police Department. He's also has Courageous Police Leader, and more information about that coming up. Also, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander, also author of the sensational new book, On Thin Ice. And you can get that and more information at onthinicebook.com. And then finally, CEO Jeff Nicholas. And he is CEO of Compliant Technologies. And, you know, they have our favorite product, which is called The Glove. And he's also a former Blackhawk pilot. So as luck would have it, and we're going to be doing a little bit of update on the Venezuela thing. So it's just going to be a great show with a lot of information. And guys, don't forget our sponsors. We have our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, Jeff's company, and they are a satellite sponsor, getting us on satellite radio this past May. We've also got AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And yes, during the live show right now, we're streaming to over a million followers. We have TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. So they check out the cool gear, like what I'm wearing and what Jeff's wearing. You can get all that at LeoRoundtable.com. Just go to the online store. And then finally, FishOrlandoBass.com. Zach has got a bass fishing charter in the Orlando area. So whether or not you're taking the wife and the kids or the grandkids to Disney and just dropping them off and hooking up with Zach for the bass fishing, or if you want to do the alligator hunting, which Zach also does, it's catching and relocating the wild Florida alligator. You can do all that. Just simply go to FishOrlandoBass.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and our very own Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? Guys, I don't know that we're going to make it past two topics, but just to kind of whet the appetite, we are doing an update on Venezuela. And then we're talking about this ice shooting in Minneapolis of the female in the vehicle. And I think it's safe to say the agitator. We're going to cover that in great depth. We also have from Law Officer a story about a Texas officer executed and charges being filed in that. It's a horrible story. And we have NYPD officers fatally shooting an armed man with a box cutter during a domestic dispute call. And we have a couple other stories in case we have time. I suspect we're not going to have time to get to those because of what's going on in Minneapolis. We need to really try to, in my opinion, to get a hold on this thing before it gets carried away. And we have another George Floyd situation on our hand. And on our hands, and everybody familiar with what really happened in Minneapolis with Derek Chauvin and George Floyd, and they're aware of. And I know I'm preaching to the choir, and Travis Yates knows about all this stuff. You know, Bob Kroll, our panelist, his wife Liz Collin, wrote the book, The Fall of Minneapolis, and has all the inside scoop of things that were not allowed to make at the trial, and it's really educational. So. Without any further ado, if you guys are okay, let's jump to Venezuela. I wanted to really cover that every day this week because there's always and constantly new information coming out. I will tell you that, and Jeff Nicholas, go ahead and open up your mic because you're probably going to do most of the talking on this one. But there was a freighter, an oil freighter that got away out of the blockade, and it changed its flag and the name of the ship, and it was Russian. And so Russia's scrambling to get their ships to hook up with the freighter before our ships chasing it down and get to it. And then Russia apparently tells us that they've got a nuclear sub underneath water following the ship to protect it and stuff, which I think was a lie. We still stopped it and seized it. And now we own it anyhow in international waters. And apparently maritime law, Vaughn, you may be not up to speed on all maritime law, but you may be familiar with this. But I guess I'm from what I'm reading, if you change your flag or the name of the ship, you do stuff like that in international waters, then anybody can board your ship, and you're just, you know, it's like game over. So I was pleased to see that we got the oil freighter. But an update on Venezuela, Delta, it was a law enforcement operation, but Delta Force executed it flawlessly. And there are the Black Hawk helicopters that made it way, and they were able to do it safely after we took out airstrips and missiles and their defense systems and stuff. And there's a little 160th group that was tied in with that, that Jeff, I understand that you're associated with. So I'm going to give you time to talk about what you can talk about that operation. I don't know if you still have friends that are there or not. I know you wish that you would have been there. That would have been just wild. But Jeff, what do you think about all the stuff that happened with Venezuela, and what can you tell us about it?
Well, I outside looking in, I've been gone for almost 20 years, but I will tell you, I had a little sense of jealousy and, envy the fact that those guys were able to do that. If you look at the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, the planning and preparation and all the moving parts, this is an orchestrated ballet, and everything had to come together at precisely the same time. This was probably an event and a time-driven mission to where everything really had to be executed without flaw. And just getting aviation assets off of floating bases is an orchestration in and of itself, not only the launching, but the recovery of those assets. And many times too, the training is more dangerous than the actual mission. We actually lost lives in many of our training episodes back in the day because they were so realistic. But if you look at where they had to fly over water, lower weather conditions, in mountainous terrain, navigating in an urban environment, trying to find your target building, and all of that stuff went without a hitch, no loss of equipment or manpower. It truly was a huge blessing and a great success. And I think it sent a big signal to a lot of people. The geopolitical table wasn't just shuffled around. We actually just took that table and flipped it on its edge and all the parts and pieces because of the implications that went on. And just to go back to that Russian ship was not loaded with oil because its hull was too high in the water. It was not carrying oil. There may have been something else on there, and maybe we were helping them out, because who's to say what was on that to maybe start a war or some kind of explosive or something like that, to where we intercepted it before it ever got to their port. There's just a lot of speculation about that. But all I know is I've been involved with enough operations in the past to know that the truth is not what the media puts out, because I've been on the other end of that, knowing that's not what happened. And so there was a lot of implications for Venezuela that goes way beyond Maduro and his antics. That's going to be hugely impactful globally, but especially for the United States.
Well, thanks for the insight. You know, we could easily be talking about Black Hawk Down too, because I know you have some involvement with that too. So it's just
I was Super 6-7, and Matt Eversman and his guys were on my aircraft that day, and it was a travesty. But this is one of the refreshing things about I think this command authority, the National Command Authority, allowed the generals and the leadership and the soldiers to do their job and not try to meddle in the mission with politics mixed, because we basically, in my opinion, in Somalia, we had our hands tied behind our back with really, really hard rules of engagement and limited assets at our disposal. And that's what we lost 18 guys in one day and then another one a day or two after that. So I was just really glad to see the outcome and what the job the guys did.
Well, you're a member of a good club, and I know they made you proud. So thanks for the words, and thanks for your service, Jeff.
I'm the guy that snuck in the door, but I'm just really happy for what those guys were able to do. You know,
they're making you shine, baby. They're making you shine. Yeah, they are. Guys, if there's no more commentary, guys, on that, and we'll cover any more updates that come down tomorrow as well. Let's go in and get into the story that's really the hot topic right now. And that, of course, is what's going on in Minneapolis. So I've got, advocate.com. We got timesnownews.com, americafirstreport.com, thegatewaypundit.com, rvmnews.com, and also coffeeandcovid.com, which might surprise some people. But there's an attorney, Jeff Childers, in Gainesville, Florida. He has a publication called coffeeandcovid.com. It's on Substack, kind of like similar to what Travis Yates is doing, but he puts out a daily newsletter. He started off with covering the COVID vaccine and then COVID, then the vaccine, and then cops and firefighters and special forces. They're hiring attorneys like him, like Jeff Childers, to get their jobs back when they're getting canned all over the country for refusing to take the jab. And now he does political commentary, very insightful on the stuff as well. So some of the titles that we're getting, and these things are all over the place. We've got shocking video shows ICE agent fatally shooting a woman in South Minneapolis. The subheadline on that same article, which is at theadvocate.com, the Department of Homeland Security says the agent was protecting himself. The video appears to show something different. No, that's funny because I watch the same video. And then we have Minneapolis ICE shooting video, agent seen firing through car window during the arrest attempt. ICE protester shot and killed after hitting officer with her vehicle. And then get the F out of Minneapolis. Far left Mayor Jacob Frey lashes out at ICE after a woman attempting to run over agent fatally shot. And then woman fatally shot after attempting to run over ICE officer. So on the coffee and cover one, which this came out this morning, it's got some pretty good and most recent information because they didn't initially release the name of the woman in the car. And Jeff Childress, the attorney in Gainesville, says that from what he can see so far, he thinks the shooting was justified just from what he's seen so far. And look, I always want to preface this by saying that there has to be an investigation that being done on this. And now I'm looking, we're getting ready to go to the commercial break. So guys, hold on to your seats, put your seatbelts on. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Galls at Galls.com. And you know, as police officers, we buy gear every day. And when you throw the online mix into it, the choices are almost limitless. But I want to remind everybody about what is really important here. It's about supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know if a company does that better than Galls at Galls.com. And even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Galls at Galls.com. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Galls gift card, and they will be your new best friends. Now, guys, I've gone the great effort to get the radio code, the free 15% off, reactivated. It's radio 15. Go to Galls.com, type in radio 15. It's been reactivated to get 15% off your next purchase at Galls.com. And now it's time to talk about our crowd favorite, Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. A beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. So I meant Arrow Precision USA, .com. And let me go ahead and get this thing on track here because I'm a little bit off track here. But what I was saying is on this one, Compliant Technologies, our favorite product that they have, is called the glove. It's helped officers. It used to be tens of thousands of times. Now it's over 250,000 times. And guess how many injuries they've had? Zero. No injuries, no death. And they're utilizing their CD3, which stands for conductive distraction de-escalation technology. And in addition to the glove, they've also got other products as well. But the glove has achieved non-lethal status, which is almost unheard of because most agencies and companies can only have less lethal equipment and less lethal results. When it comes to weapons retention, the glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. Look, we left off talking about this mess going on in Minneapolis, and I'm really taking the story from Attorney Jeff Childress in Gainesville, Florida. He's got a publication called Coffee and COVID at coffeeandcovid.com, and that's where I'm getting this most up-to-date information. And so we have an ICE agent that fatally shot a female that was in a vehicle, and according to the Coffee and COVID, and I've seen, look, the videos have read a lot of articles. Everybody's pretty much in sync on this part. Around 9:30 in the morning on Wednesday in Minneapolis, Renee Good, 37 years old, it says that she's a gay progressive pro-immigrant activist. So she was a protester that was out there, a mother of three, and says that she deliberately tried to interfere with ICE officers. She drove her truck into their way, into their path, and then drove over an ICE agent while being ordered to stop and desist. So it says that she actually drove over him. He was in a standing position, so I'm assuming that when I watched the video, I wasn't sure if she ran over his feet or, you know, brushed against him or hit him or whatever. It was hard to tell from the angle of the video that was available, at least what I had access to. But there's no doubt that she was sideways in the road blocking traffic. Cars were having to go around her. The investigation is ongoing, though. And he goes on to say, Attorney Childress, that the left is attempting to turn Mrs. Good into the next George Floyd. And he said that it's an unbelievable coincidence that this shooting happened about a mile from where George Floyd died. And a new George Floyd incident, he says, would help Democrats distract everyone from this debacle going on with the Minnesota fraud scandal. And then, you know, we have Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, you know, that is weighing in. And we've also got Congresswoman Omar accusing the Trump administration of spreading false information. She's beyond outraged, reckless, callous. We got DHS has already published multiple notices defending the agent's actions. And President Trump has also weighed in as well. But there is an investigation ongoing, like I said earlier. And President Trump says that if the violence continues, he may be able to invoke the Insurrection Act and bring in the military. And Mayor Jacob Frey, Chief Brian O'Hara. I saw that press conference, which was, in my opinion, a disaster because they've pretty much, in my opinion, thrown the officer under the bus. And I want you guys to talk about it, but I just want to remind everybody that's watching the show that these two characters, I didn't know that the police officer standing next to Mayor Jacob Frey was the chief. And so I'm here, the mayor talking about how it was positively, you know, the officer's fault. He just wanted to use his power and shoot the woman. And then I'm expecting this officer just to turn around and walk away and get off the stage. And because this officer is entitled to due process and to a fair investigation without slanting everybody's opinion. And then this officer gets up and starts talking. It's Chief O'Hara, you know, and of course, he's going to say what his employers told him to do because, you know, police chiefs are appointed by mayors. And I was highly disappointed. But whoever wants to take this one first, I know we'll be talking about this for a while and we have 4.5 minutes till our next commercial break. So whoever wants to start us off first, and I have nobody moving. So Vaughn, if you don't mind, since this is in your wheelhouse, would you mind starting us off on the topic?
Yeah. So those who don't know, this is what we do. We work most of the high profile cases in the country. There's just two basic questions that we start to look at. That is, was the threat assessment reasonable? Was the response reasonable, right? So what we don't do and what I would encourage the listeners not to do is we don't ever evaluate a use of force based on a video. There's a lot of capabilities and limitations of videos that we're aware of. We don't trust videos for angle, speed, distance. And yet we release them to the public and say, hey, make a decision based on this video. We already have seen multiple angles that tell very different stories about the speed of the car, whether it does or doesn't impact. Some of the videos clearly show him get hit by the car. Other ones make it look like a close call. So we don't evaluate cases based on videos. All of these cases are required to be evaluated through the lens of the officer who used the force, not from the lens of us sitting in an air-conditioned room. And where we have the benefit, everybody who's watched the video did exactly what I did. You stopped it, you slowed it down, you put it in reverse, you looked very carefully at where was the officer, what was he doing. None of those things are clear. We would never give an opinion on a case like this based on the video. We haven't interviewed the officer. Whoever's get a chance to interview the officer will figure out what he was paying attention to, not paying attention to, what he perceived. And then after we talk about what did he perceive, what did it mean to him, right? Well, how close was he to the car? What was the speed of the car from his perspective? What was the car doing right before? We can see a lot of those things. But at this point, experts in this industry are going to speak with the least amount of certainty. They're going to put question marks instead of exclamation points on everything that we're looking at and asking. And that's because we've seen way too many of these cases. And I'll just say what Jeff said earlier, just in the military context. The media narrative never looks like the reality of a use of force case. That's the same thing we see in domestic police issues. And so we're going to sit back. We're going to wait. We have not been invited into this case yet, but if we are, we're going to do what everybody else does, or we're going to do what we always do on these cases, and that is sit down and actually examine the evidence, even while all the political conversations are burning in the background.
Travis, Attorney Vaughn Kling brings up a good point, because even if you're being shot at or being run over and hit by a car, and if you don't view that as a threat of great bodily injury or death, you're not going to be justified in using lethal, despite the fact that most people would be there if you're not in fear yourself. Even if a reasonable officer would feel that way, but you don't, you wouldn't be cleared, correct?
No, that's not necessarily true. Some states have both a subjective and objective requirement. Right. You have to subjectively actually feel the fear, and it has to be objectively reasonable. If this is a federal view, it's an objective test. Right. So it actually does matter what we objectively view as the threat, whether the officer perceived it or not. And we see some of those cases where maybe a rookie officer thinks a guy who's standing 5 feet away with a knife is not a threat. Right. Because he's like, well, he can't get to me. Where the veterans are going, oh, no, he can actually get to you. His subjective failure to recognize the threat does not change the reasonableness of the response.
Well, thank you for pointing that out. So you're saying that federally there would be a change in that. So if the officer would not necessarily have to be in fear of great bodily injury or death if he's using lethal force, even if he's it wouldn't matter.
It's a reasonable officer standard, so it's an objective test. So basically, would a reasonable officer in the position of that officer, knowing what that officer knew, and evaluating whatever it was the officer perceived. Like, we're going to see a whole lot more than the officer. So I'll try not to be overcomplicated. We can only hold the officer accountable to what the officer was aware of, right? And then based on what they're aware of, they're going to assign certain meaning to that. That meaning is assigned based on training, education, experience, and reasonable inferences. We have to know what was this officer's training, education, experience, and what did it mean to him. Only the officer can tell us that. But it is ultimately an objective test.
Got to go to the break, guys, but stick with us. Here we go. All right, guys, we're here to talk about Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. You can visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that measures every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And, you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the air builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4, E1 Pro, and Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market back last year or the year before at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence. But this means that now the civilian clients can now get their hands on the Primo stuff and their M5 AR three-way platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less, but you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Again, AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined still by Attorney Vaughn Kleem from Forest Science. We've got Dr. Travis Yates, retired major from Tulsa, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander, and also Jeff Nicholas, CEO of Comply Technologies with The Glove. And we've been talking about, and we're still going to be talking about, Minneapolis and what went down there. We went the commercial break. I'm still learning things, guys, and I'm glad we have these guys on the show. So Vaughn Kleem, attorney with Forest Science, was explaining how my initial thought was that if an officer used lethal force, but if he was not in fear of great bodily injury or death, that it would be a bad shoot. And Vaughn was explaining that there are different jurisdictions that handle that different way, even within the United States. So I'll let you touch on that. And then if you want to address what Travis had talked about on the break, we can do that too. But we have 9 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yeah. So very quickly, you just simply asked if he didn't subjectively fear the serious bodily injury or death. The point I'm making that there are some jurisdictions, particularly criminal state jurisdictions, where you have to subjectively fear serious bodily injury or death, and that fear must be objectively reasonable. When we're talking about federal, particularly constitutional violations, 1983 actions, it's an objective test. Use of force is analyzed on an objective standard. So as long as a reasonable person in their position, in the officer's position, could have reasonably believed that the vehicle posed a threat of death or serious bodily injury, it actually doesn't matter if the individual officer recognized it.
Interesting.
Maintains an objective test. I went on to say that these are unlikely going to be where the issues are. The two main questions being asked in any use of force case is whether the threat assessment was reasonable. Is it reasonable to believe that a vehicle poses a threat of death or serious bodily injury? I don't think that's going to be an uphill battle. That's fairly clear at this point. The second point is, was deadly force a reasonable response to a deadly threat? That's also probably going to be handled fairly quickly. We see a lot of these cases where vehicles try to run officers over and the officers are found to be perfectly reasonable. But what's going to actually be the discussion, I think, is going to be outside of the law and more about policy, more about training, more about should the officer have been there in the first place? Was this avoidable? And when it comes to community optics and transparency and building community trust, those are going to be a lot louder conversations. I'll turn it over. I think Jeff probably has some things to say about it. Be interested to hear his take on that particular issue.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more with Vaughn than what he just said. It's, you know, a lot of people are talking about, was it objectively reasonable for the officer or the agent in this case to believe that the vehicle in and of itself posed an immediate threat or an imminent threat of serious bodily injury or death? That we got to get outside of that, because the objective reasonableness has a lot of other things that you have to consider. And it's the training and what's the policy and procedure. And we do know that the policy and procedure is that you are not to stand in front of the vehicle, and that you're to use alternatives other than using lethal force to try to stop a vehicle. Now, I've heard people say, well, their policy says you can't use lethal force to prevent a vehicle from fleeing. Well, I don't think for a second that he was shooting at the vehicle to prevent it from fleeing. I believe that he was shooting at the vehicle because he perceived it to be a threat to him and as an imminent threat. But was that objective really reasonable? And were his actions consistent with the policies and procedures and how he was trained? Or did his decisions then rise to be unreasonable? Because a reasonable officer with same training and experience within that same organization would not have done what he did that led up to it. And we just had that Barnes versus Felix case last year that the Supreme Court made it really clear that it's the totality of the circumstances. And you can't just look at the absolute moment that he made the judgment call and the determination that he was going to use lethal force. There's a larger analysis that has to be done. And to be honest with you, we see substantial deviations to the policy and procedure that one could argue had a significant impact on how this thing ultimately was resolved and what the outcome was. However, what we don't know is, are there justifications for those actions? And we won't know that until we hear from the agent and he's interviewed. So, you know, there's just so much that has to be looked at and analyzed. And it's not as simple as just saying, was it reasonable at that moment? That's just part of the analysis. And, you know, unfortunately, with the LAPD, with the investigation adjudication of over 700 officer-involved shooting lethal force cases, and I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I've had similar cases where we've had to, you know, you have to pare it down. And it's, you can't have this, you know, the 2020 hindsight. That's what we can't have. But we also have to work within the realm of reality as well. So, and then we have, will he be held accountable? Well, you know, what's the standard here? I would hope that administratively, the reason we have policies and procedures, typically you want them to be a little more stringent than what the law is. So if you go outside your policy and procedure, you're still below that threshold of criminal culpability. And so will the agency hold him accountable? Will he be held accountable perhaps at a civil level? Or perhaps will there be criminal charges filed? I don't know. What I do find problematic is the statements that were made on both sides of the aisle relative to their positions and their analysis and belief of what actually occurred. Because nobody, if you have any investigative background whatsoever and you're an expert at all, you know you can't have a critical opinion on it that shortly after the incident. It takes time. And the reality is that, you know, Americans are going to have perhaps arguably a justified concern on whether there's going to be a thorough, accurate, and complete investigation, and that if accountability is warranted, that will actually be carried out based on what the president and the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security said immediately following this incident. They've already made up their mind that this thing is justified. I don't think any expert can say. If you're an expert, you're going to acknowledge, I can't say, I don't know enough. I can look at those videos and all the different angles. I can have things that I'm going to have to reconcile, but I can't reconcile it until I have more information. Yeah. And that's kind of where I stand with this, you know.
Yeah, let me, if I can jump in real quick, because I want to, this is a lot of what Jeff's talking about is an ongoing, a lot of it's an academic debate that's been occurring for decades. Barnes v. Phillips reinitiated it, right? Does that mean that officers can create their own jeopardy? And the Supreme Court in Barnes v. Phillips says, we're not answering that question right now. Half the side says it opened the door to allow us to talk about whether if an officer creates the jeopardy, actually not even creates, if an officer supports or in any way advances the jeopardy, then they can be held liable, civilly liable for creating or participating in generating that jeopardy. That's an academic debate that's occurring all across the country. Here's what I do know is there's no law yet or any training that says if an officer violates their policy, and that's not a policy across the country, certainly it sounds like one in LAPD. If an officer stands in front of a vehicle, intentionally stands in front of a vehicle, there's no law that says you then get to run over the officer. right? You don't remove culpability, and it does not mitigate the threat that the vehicle poses. So that's why we have administrative responses that Jeff talked about. Maybe the agency will deal with that as a training issue. But there's no place in the country that says just because an officer is standing in front of your car in violation of his own policy, and I don't even know if that was their policy in this case, that you get to run them over, or that the officer loses their inherent or their right of self-defense. So those questions are going to be fleshed out. The other thing is standing in front of a vehicle, any place that an officer positions themselves is a tactical decision. Tactical decisions are by definition discretionary. So every tactical decision from where you stand, whether you stand on the hood of the car, in front of the car, behind the car, is based on a real world, real time, in the moment decision that is a trade-off. It's like in economics, it's risk benefits and trade-offs. So there might've been a lot of good reasons for that officer to be where he was, but the trade-off is he puts himself in a position where if the driver decides to assault him with a vehicle, he has provided the opportunity to do that. Any imminent threat analysis is going to look at whether the person had the intent or willingness, ability, means, and opportunity to inflict death or serious bodily injury. All we're saying when we say don't stand in front of a car or don't stand too close to a suspect is don't provide them the opportunity to hurt you if they decide to do that. And those policies are not built on legal requirements. They're built on risk mitigation. Like we would like to shoot less people. One of the way we can shoot less people is to engage less frequently with vehicles, right? You see some jurisdictions with the same mindset who say, look, our goal as an agency is to shoot less drivers of cars. One way to do that is don't stand in front of the car. We also have a goal of reducing the number of people we shoot altogether. So if someone runs from you with a gun in their hand, we have agencies that say, do not chase them, because you can reasonably predict at the point of capture, there's going to be an increased risk of violence. And so by policy, these jurisdictions will say, do not chase to capture anyone who has a gun in their hand.
Good start, Vaughn. Hold that thought. The risk we got a commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. It's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us into trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afiako. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, here's the deal. The founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're chief or sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Amazing opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We are joined by, we've got LAPD Commander Jeff Winninger, retired as a lieutenant. We've also got Attorney Vaughn Kleem from Force Science, former law enforcement as well. And we've got Dr. Travis Yates. He is a retired major from the Tulsa Police Department. And Jeff Nicholas, CEO of Comply Technologies. Our favorite product is the glove. And speaking of the glove, I want to have a tie-in. We've got a little over 9 minutes left in the segment in today's show, but I do want to do a tie-in when Vaughn gets done about the glove, because I don't know of a better vehicle extraction tool than the glove that I think every agency should have in order to lower liability for the agency and for the individual officer. But Vaughn, I know that you were kind of wrapping up on the Minneapolis thing and explaining some stuff. So the floor is yours.
No, I think I just at this point, I agree with Jeff. We don't have enough information to know what the officer knew or how to really analyze the case from a legal standpoint. There's those two main questions. Was the threat assessment reasonable? Was the response? And I think Jeff did a great job of really refocusing us on where the conversation really is going to take place, which is, you know, these cases are evaluated under the totality of the circumstances. Part of those circumstances are the decisions that officers make along the way. Whether that affects the Fourth Amendment reasonableness inquiry or whether it just results in policy violations are what we talk about every day in this business. At what is the level of culpability? How wrong does the officer need to be before it shifts culpability from the suspect back to the officer? and really confusing all this is we have really smart, important conversations within policing, right? Tactical after action reviews. We want to have constant, never ending improvement by looking at what we did and how we can do it better. How can we mitigate intent through de-escalation or ability through restraints or means through denial access to weapons or opportunity by effective use of cover and distance and time, right? So we're always looking at those from a tactical standpoint and doing tactical after action reviews. A lot of the progressive activists have weaponized tactical after action reviews by saying, and if you don't do those things well, officers, we're going to shift culpability from the suspect who tried to kill you to the officer who was imperfect in their tactical decisions. So at what level does the do tactical imperfection strip the officer's ability to defend themselves, right? And these are just academic discussions we're having all the time. I just wanted to highlight that at this point, whether the officer violated some policy of standing in front of a vehicle or not, there's no place in the country I've seen that that would strip him of his right of self-defense if they ultimately determined that he was facing a threat of death or serious bodily injury.
So I'm curious, and I haven't forgot about talking about the glove or asking Vaughn if he would be willing to maybe get that done at SHOT Show. But just to find out where we're all at, there's, you know, five of us on the panel today. Are we pretty much all agreed that it could be that is a possibility? It could be a justified shoot, or it could be an unjustified shoot. But that there's no clear indication that it would be justified or unjustified by what we know right now. Because at the very least, we don't even know what was going through the officer's head, and the videos I've seen don't show everything either. So with that, where's everybody at on that?
Well, I would say, Chip, that it depends on what venue we're talking about. Administratively, civilly,
no.
Criminally?
I'm talking about the
standard of evaluation is the same, but preponderance of evidence is needed for civil. I mean, it's
and criminally.
A heck of a lot. Criminally?
Yeah, I'm talking criminal.
I think just the nature, I mean, I think the proof's in the pudding. I mean, as far as the statements from the president and the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, you're not going to see anything from a federal standpoint.
And then, well, I'm not necessarily talking about what the intentions of the prosecutors are. I'm just talking about statute-wise. Does everybody agree that we don't have enough evidence to support either side?
Even law officers are innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, right now there's nothing. I mean,
we have people waiting right now. I put up a post on social media. I put a link to the video, and people were watching the same video. But there's people on one side saying completely justified. People on the other side, he murdered her, and he's guilty of murder. And so I'm just trying to see if we're all in agreement on that. There's really not enough. It could go either way at this point. I mean, I do think that it will end up being justified, but I can't say that emphatically. I can't say that I have enough information to make that call. Not that. I mean, people like Vaughn and Jeff would be better at making that call than a guy like me that didn't do his career doing that. But
certainly, Chip, we don't have the information that we need to make that call. But I mean, we see these type of videos on this show every week, right? Yeah. And even if you take an officer like in the Young case in Ohio that was prosecuted, he was acquitted. So I mean, these similar videos are all over the country involving vehicles, and we don't see really a lot of successful prosecutions or even attempts at it. So I'll leave it at that, other than the fact that we talk a lot about de-escalation. Does anyone want to talk about the escalation that the politicians have caused in the state of Minnesota? I mean, the governor just a few weeks ago said someone will die in Minnesota if ICE comes here. And then right before this happened, he said it's our patriotic duty to go out there and protest them. Mm-hmm. And so if you have no brain cells and you watch The View every day, you're going to be out there acting very stupid around law enforcement doing operations. I mean, no one wants to talk about the rhetoric that caused those individuals to go out there and put themselves in that position that unfortunately causes tragedy. Vaughn talks a lot about honest accountability and honest conversations. Probably we're long past it because nobody wants to have those conversations.
Well, you're right.
Everybody wants to be on a political side and have an opinion.
I believe these mayors and governors are culpable. I believe they're accomplices to these crimes.
Well, I think they wanted this. They needed this to happen, and it will take the attention off of what else is going on in Minnesota. But talking about the glove, I already mentioned that I love it as a vehicle extraction tool. What do you see about the possibilities for the glove being used in this particular scenario, Jeff? And I know you've got just under 3 minutes.
Just real quick, I'll let the other guys comment if they want. Like I said before, is it possible or plausible that it could have helped in this situation to get her mind off of other than putting the car in drive from reverse and park and then drive? Maybe. It happened very quickly. But these other guys would have better comments on that. If we could have stopped it, that would have helped the situation immensely. But, you know, who knows? I'd love to say definitively yes, but in this case, it happened very quickly.
True.
I'll just add, I want to echo what Jeff said again and Travis. We don't have enough information to give an opinion. I will say it over and over again, experts would not look at a video and give you an opinion right. on the reasonableness or justification of a use of force. That's not what we do. But, you know, having said that, I think just framing some of the complications, what I call tension points. If this is a civil case at the federal level, you know, you're going to look at qualified immunity issues, which means you have to show that no reasonable officer could have believed this was okay. And it has to be beyond debate. The fact that we would debate it or some 50% say it was okay, I'd say maybe I'd do it, maybe I'd done some. The law inures to the benefit of the officer. The officer gets qualified immunity. He goes back to work and they can deal with training issues there. On a criminal side, it is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And you have to look at a specific element to show, again, in most places, it's a reasonableness standard. And you got to be able to show that there no reasonable officer could have believed that this was okay. It is an incredibly high bar. And so when you ask us to predict an outcome, one, we don't have enough information to predict the outcome, but I can predict that where the discussions are going to go. And I don't think they're going to be easy conversations for people who think that on the side, who think this is an obvious, clear case of excessive force. It's a lot more nuanced than that for sure.
You know, Chip, the one thing that I would say is that, you know, the reality, and we all have to face this, and those of us that are in law enforcement or have been in law enforcement need to really champion this reality. It's that law enforcement's ability to perform their duties is dependent upon the public's approval of their actions. And the reality is, wherever you fall on this thing, from an emotional standpoint, the reality is that we have to be willing to have a conversation and listen to people and not listen to develop a response to what they have to say, but to understand where they're coming from. Because truth be told, regardless of where you are on this, there's validity on both. There's areas for improvement. And whether there's criminal culpability, civil culpability, or he's held accountable at a department level, we need to ensure that we make the improvements that we can try to avoid this thing happening again. Because I don't want to see another law enforcement officer have to go through this. What he's going to have to go through is going to be devastating to him. So, you know, that's really the big picture for me. I want us to do better.
Good point. It does tie into our other guests were saying.
We are out of time, but thank you guys so much for being on the show. I got 30 seconds to wrap it up, but I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt. So if you're looking for someone to support that's not going to embarrass you, go there. Look no further. Hey, also, thank you so much to Attorney Von Kleem with Force Science. We've got Dr. Travis Yates, retired Tulsa Police Major, Lieutenant Jeff Weninger from LAPD, and Jeff Nicholas with the Compliant Technologies. And guys, please support our sponsors. We love them. Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, GunLearn.com, and Medicare.life, Safer Recruiting, Two Bells and Fisher, OrlandoBass.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.